Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's March 18th. 44 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. You can repeat that in Heber City as well under mostly sunny skies. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back as we track some record heat moving our way. Lots of sunshine expected for us today, especially in Park City, as we see those high temperatures warming all the way up to around 70 degrees. The Heber Valley, we're looking at high temperatures climbing into the mid-70s as we go throughout this afternoon. Again, with lots of sunshine expected across the area, these temperatures will soar well above average for this time of the year. As we move into your Thursday, look for that sunshine to stick around. We're talking about high temperatures jumping into the low to mid-70s for us in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing to around the low 80s for us in the Heber Valley. Are we talking about summer or spring? Yeah, neither one of those seasons have officially arrived yet, but we're going to be seeing those temperatures again way above average. As we move into the end of the week for your Friday, look for more sunshine as high pressure will be firmly in control of our weather. That means high temperatures will be in the mid-70s for highs in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the low to possibly mid-80s for us in the Heber Valley. It's going to be quite toasty to wrap up the week and to usher in the first day of spring. As we head into your upcoming weekend, we're going to start off with lots of sunshine on your Saturday. Highs will stay in the mid-70s in Park City with highs in the low 80s in the Heber Valley. Moving towards Sunday, we're going to have a weak front that's going to move our way. It will be a dry front, so don't expect any precipitation, but it will bring with it a few extra clouds, and it will bring some cooler temperatures. So it'll knock our temperatures back to being only about 10 to 15 degrees above average as opposed to being 20 to 30 degrees above average. But we're looking at highs in the low 60s in Park City on Sunday with highs in the low 70s. In the Heber Valley on your Sunday. Moving into next week, we'll start off with those temperatures, again, still above average, but only about 10 to 15 degrees above average with highs in the mid-60s for your Monday and Tuesday into the Park City area. We'll be looking at those highs into the low 70s in the Heber Valley. And again, we'll call it a mixture of sun and clouds with just a few more clouds in the sky. That's a look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, I believe we have Nikki. Good morning.
Good morning. So yet another warm morning. None of our mountain weather stations dropped below freezing for a significant time overnight, but there might be a superficial just crust on the surface this morning due to the clear skies. Our main concern moving forward is just going to be that wet snow. So we've got these really high temps. We're expecting to see wet, loose avalanches, probably on all aspects on the solar side of the compass, so west, south, and east-facing aspects. We also want to start thinking about wet slab avalanches. So we know that we have this structured snowpack. We've got all these crusts from earlier in the year, and we still have those faceted grains near the bottom. As water starts to make its way through the snowpack, we could start to see larger wet slab avalanches. So the travel advice stays the same. If you're starting to see point releases, roller balls, or the snow surface just isn't supportable anymore, a different aspect, likely a shaded one, or just watch your timing. Avalanche danger is going to rise to moderate throughout the day.
All right, Nikki, thank you. Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Heber City Councilmember Mike Johnson, recapping yesterday's meeting. Acting City Manager Jody Emery and Deputy City Manager Heather Sneddon previewing this week's City Council meeting. And from the Timpanogos Valley Theater, Director Sarah Ray of the production Sister Act Junior calling in with details, also telling us a little bit more about their weekly improv sessions. Then stay tuned for the Mountain Life. Today's guests include Amy Lenaker, a former C-suite executive whose new book explores the question, must stress be the price of success? Then a conversation with Ellen Brown of Stacy Wellness, a medical practice in Orem and Heber specializing in women's health. Finally, Park City local Elizabeth Lentz sharing information on the Silent Walks for Peace, a meditative group walk that's taking place every Saturday this month with the intention of expanding peace and compassion. All of that heard on The Mountain Life, of course, every Wednesday from 9 to 10. Hey, just a reminder that we want to thank everyone for those of you who supported our winter pledge drive and making it a huge success. If you requested a thank you gift when you made your pledge donation, we'd like you to come pick it up. And boy, that'll help save us a bunch of money and just, avoid anything getting lost in the mail. So we've set aside a few opportunities to do that. It's happening Tuesday, March 24th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. here at the KPCW studios, or Wednesday, March 25th from 2:30 to 6:30 p.m. Again, we have those two dates. We're hoping that you can make one of those two dates, but if you need to make other arrangements, we can work that out with you shortly. Just give Joe a call at 435-649-9004. You can also email her. That's jo@kpcw.org. Taking a look at some local news, Canyons Village now has permission to tax itself to build more hotels and residences. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that Summit County Council came around to the idea after first saying no.
The Summit County Council denied a Talisker Corporation affiliate's request for a public infrastructure district last December. At the time, some council members expressed concerns since a letter from Utah's state auditor had advised caution with PIDs. But after Utah lawmakers passed a bill to make sure PIDs don't pose a liability to cities or counties, Talisker returned to the county council and won its support March 11th. Councilmember Tanya Hansen says facilitating a new hotel at Canyons Village will help Summit County compete with Deer Valley Resort's East Village in Wasatch County.
And as people have heard me say this publicly before, I'm concerned of what's going on at Deer Valley East and the impacts that's having on our county, on our TRT tax, those types of things.
One condition of the approval is for Talisker to cover the cost of transportation infrastructure. The council will require the developer to set aside $1 million raised by the PID for a bus rapid transit station for the county's bus service. PIDs work by issuing bonds like other government entities and typically repay them with property taxes, but they only tax themselves, not other property owners in the county or city they're within. According to Summit County's civil attorneys and public finance banker Sam Elder, the Utah legislature has taken pains to say that PIDs are not part of county or city governments. Elder told the council part of House Bill 507 passed this year addresses that.
It also expressly states that the financial obligations, including audit and accounting, are solely the burden of the PID, not of the creating entity.
The Utah State Auditor previously suggested that PIDs should be understood as part of the city or county that creates them, but Summit County's top civil attorney, Dave Thomas, has repeatedly told the council that the auditor was wrong. When the council resumed PID discussions in February, Councilmember Roger Armstrong said he still wasn't convinced, citing concerns about accelerating growth. He was absent March 11th when his colleagues voted 4-0 to approve the Canyons PID. The district's boundaries will include land above the golf course north of the Orange Bubble Express Lift, currently reserved for a hotel and conference center. It could also pay for the expansion of High Mountain Road between the Red Pine and Sunrise gondolas. Last month, attorney Laurel Simpson and Elder estimated Canyons had built about 40 to 55% of the buildings it's entitled to build. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
On the phone now with a recap of yesterday's Heber City Council meeting, I have Councilmember Mike Johnston. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, so you declined to sign Wasatch County Councilmember Eric Rowland's letter to UDOT with a list of concerns about the bypass road. How come?
Oh, wow, you're starting off on a good topic. So this is probably one of the biggest issues I think that our city, our valley is kind of faced for, I mean, we've really been facing it for decades about how to, the reroute of Highway 40. Right now, it comes right down Main Street. It's become intolerable, really, for downtown and for everybody that lives here. UDOT, I'll just give the background. UDOT spent 6 years and chose what they're calling Alternative B, which runs around the west side of Heber City, connects 189 around the west side of Heber City, and then ends up connecting through the North Fields to Potter Lane. That is the route they've chosen. The other route that they had nailed it down or put what we're looking at was alternative A, which comes into back to Highway 40 sooner. It comes in at 900 North, which is the Smith Market interchange. So those are the two things that they looked at the last year, and they came down on Route B. There's unhappy people that think that the North Fields should be kept and that they don't want the highway coming through it. I think, and I'm adamant that the best route that most effectively moves the most traffic is the route that UDOT has chosen. I think that is the best for Heber City in the long term, and it's going to work for the long term. I don't think, and UDOT came to the same conclusion. There's people that want to, quote, save the North Fields, and we're really talking about a two-mile stretch, like the last 2 miles that connects the 900 North turnoff to Smith up to Potter Lane. And I think that's the best route. And I think that most of the things that, I mean, Councilman Eric Rowland is a good friend of mine. He's on the county council. He's really good. But I disagree with his premises that it's going to be harmful, so super harmful to the aquifer or to the valley that trumps everything. And I disagree with that.
Yeah. So you're saying that it's a bit short-sighted, and it's like, you know, in 30 years from now, we're going to wish we would have done what UDOT said.
I'll even say it different. In 10 years from now, we would regret that we had pushed UDOT on another route. It's not sustainable what they're doing for yeah, maybe it's going to work for 10 years, but it won't work for 20 years or beyond. It just won't.
All right.
And even when it's done, it won't. It's going to be less effective moving through traffic and directing it around town. It's a longer route. It's going to be a slower route. It's not going to work.
And certainly that the folks that support the shorter route, alternative A, they're saying, I mean, that what UDOT's proposing is going to save commuters all of 70 seconds. I don't know how they've come to that conclusion, but
They're reading UDOT. I mean, UDOT puts out a lot of data. For me, it just comes down to supporting Heber City's Main Street and the quality of life for 20,000 people that live here now and everybody else that uses it, which is another 20,000 people that use it, come through Main Street every day. That's going to be jumping up to 80,000 cars a day by 2050. And I just think we need to support Heber City rather than 2 miles of the road going through hay fields and cattle. It's the plan that works. And, you know, I love the North Fields, too. I love the greenness and the openness of it. But it doesn't trump everything.
So do you believe the bypass route, either alternative, will do enough to address the traffic problems?
No, I don't think Route A will do enough. And that's what UDOT has also said. That's what their data and their analysis says.
Yeah, but do you think B will?
Yeah, I think B is the only choice, the only valid choice.
All right, let's move on. Downtown redevelopment has been a big priority the past few years for the Heber City Council. So what changes can locals expect with this next?
Well, certainly getting traffic off of a commuter or through traffic off of Main Street is huge. And we don't know how long that's going to take. I mean, we're all hopeful it'll come before the Olympics. And, you know, so we've got 8 years to hopefully UDOT and the federal government can get that done. But in the meantime, we're looking ahead. You know, downtown redevelopment is really important for the city and for us on the city council. Like I said before, we want Heber City downtown to be a drive-to destination, not a drive-through highway. You know, we want this to be where people gather. And so one big thing we're working on, Leslie, is redeveloping our city park on Main Street. It's about 3.5 acres. Changing that from just a green park to a downtown plaza. And our goals in that is to have a really vibrant downtown, an anchor for people to come to with year-round activity. We want it to be a welcoming destination for residents, sort of like their public living room, and providing opportunities for people to continue, you know, in this town to connect and to be together. And so that's kind of the other big issue that's on the, you know, you see on Facebook right now, is what we should be doing with this park, turning it into a destination plaza. We started 2 years ago with the new main stage bandstand that's been done now, and we also converted 200 South into a festival street. Hopefully you've seen that. It's really awesome. And the next amenities we're considering is, well, there's a whole list of them that we're looking at. A skate trail for the summer and an ice ribbon in the winter. An all abilities playground, certainly things like new bathrooms and a new picnic pavilion. but also bigger things like an activity center and a splash pad and food and beverage opportunities, and all while, you know, doing all this while trying to keep the historic trees that we love and don't want to cut, certainly aren't going to cut down, and also keeping a big, you know, like a large majestic lawn that's, you know, right now most of 90% of that park is grass. We want to certainly keep a, maybe half of that. So these are things we're really working on, and we'll get it done.
So you certainly support then the scale of what's being proposed, which is, it's pretty big.
It is big. It's kind of like Park City looking at the, you know, your Bonanza Park redevelopment, right? It's a big deal.
Yeah. And so what are you hearing from locals? I mean, do they agree with you?
Yes. Most people that I interact with think that we need to absolutely do something with downtown. I was at the Chamber of Commerce once, and there we had, you know, 80 people there yesterday and talked about this. Most people, certainly people in business and people running the economy and doing things, they support redeveloping Heber's downtown. It really isn't that great of a place right now.
One of the city's main goals is to attract more small businesses and to turn Heber City into a place that people want to relax, spend time, and their money. Right now, as we know, Main Street, a lot of fast food chains. So has the city thought about policies similar to Park City's that would limit the number of chain stores allowed in the downtown core?
Yeah, actually we have. We've talked about that quite a bit. And we have revamped our downtown core. It's basically for the five central blocks of what can come in and what. Now, we haven't actually said you can't, like a chain store can't come, but I think the codes that we have would discourage them. But it's not just about discouragement right now. What we really want to do is entice the right kind of businesses to come. And there's only two ways to do that. That's to, you know, one, get the traffic off of Main Street, and two, bring back a place that people will actually come to and be here, like other cities have done, you know, communities have done with, you know, central plazas and placemaking and bringing people to actually be downtown. And then I think the businesses we want will follow.
All right. What other ideas are you talking about to make downtown more of a destination?
Well, we have a group called Community Alliance for Main Street. And they're very active, and the city's very supportive of Community Alliance for Main Street, or CAMS, as you know, the CAMS, to activate programming in our downtown. And we're using, so one thing we're using is the new bandstand, or the main stage at the park. We've got that programmed most of the summer. Certainly the thing that we do every week is Heber Market on Main, which is the farmer's market, the food market, and the music. That's every Thursday night, starts in June 6th and goes for 10 weeks, maybe 12. We've also programming the park for Saturday events, music events, and then Rachel Kaler, who's the executive director of CAMS, is also now programming it for Sunday evening concerts. She's calling it Soulful Sunday, and we did that last year, and a lot of local people coming and like youth choirs and things like that, and that was really good. So we're really trying to attract events down to our downtown. Certainly we've been doing great on like the Halloween party and the Christmas party and huge. We have a whole week of events planned around the 4th of July week. Also, I know Park City is doing this too, America 250, where we're celebrating the 250th, you know, anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. So trying to get people to come downtown and enjoy together.
Yeah, speaking of City Park, Councilmember Morgan Murdoch has kind of been taking the lead on dogs in Park City policy discussion. Do you think there is a community appetite for allowing city dogs in City Park this summer?
We do. We talked about this at our retreat, our planning retreat in January. In fact, even before that, last year, we took a lot of surveys throughout the summer of residents. our dog policy right now is no dogs allowed in any of the parks anytime. And we feel that that's been kind of prohibitive, and a lot of people agree. Most people agree that dogs should be allowed in parks. And so what we're trying to figure out now is what's the best way to manage that? And honestly, we're kind of looking at Park City, too, like how do you guys manage it? We're kind of just as much of a dog-loving community as Park City is, and yet we have a lot of issues with dogs. If you have a law that prohibits dogs in the parks, then we should enforce it, and that's not working so great. There's two things we're looking at, and Morgan Murdoch is taking the lead. One is just dogs in the park in general, and then two is how do you deal with dogs at events like the farmer's market, right? I don't know who we're going to come down on, but we are talking about it. We spent 15 minutes going through five pages of his concerns yesterday, and if you have, if people are interested, they should talk to us, tell us their thoughts.
All right. Moving on, during work session, the council discussed Mayflower Lofts. The background here is that the original development agreement allowed 54 units because it was all meant to be commercial space. That fell flat. Now the applicant wants a mix of homes and retail space. And I guess I'm like thinking hideout here, but the property located near the slope, close to the intersection of US 40 and SR 32. So,
32.
Yeah, you were part of the council when this project was first approved in 2022. So what was the original vision for flex space here?
Well, we're talking about the intersection of Highway 40 and River Road. River Road crosses and becomes 32 on the road up to Francis. That intersection in our general plan is shown as a North Village town center. And the slopes is on one corner at the resort, and there's commercial there, and there's also townhomes. And then the diagonal corner heading up to Francis, where the old Highway 40 is, that was one of the first annexations of North Village that we did. And we are looking for commercial development there, but I think it's going to take a while. And that's what I told this new applicant. They're looking to maybe buy the property because the current owner who did the annexation has not been able to drum up interest in a commercial project. And my point that I made was, commercial is going to follow residential someday, and we need to kind of preserve this. It's just because you can do something doesn't mean this is the time to do it. They're a potential buyer of the property, looking at what they could do, and they're looking at townhomes. And most of our feeling is, we've got a lot of residential, we've got a lot of townhomes planned. There's a lot that's planned and can be built and is coming, and maybe this property isn't, we don't really want to change it from commercial to townhomes.
Yeah. And again, I am bringing up Hideout because that's exactly what happened there. The commercial core was changed to allow for residential, and now they're complaining they have no commercial space. So, yeah.
Exactly. Mm. Right now, townhomes is hot, right?
Yeah. But
we need to preserve commercial land for commercial uses.
So with all of the new construction in Northern Hebe City, do you think the demand for townhomes is slowing down?
I'm not a realtor. I really don't know. I live on the north end of town. I built my house there 26 years ago, and now it's growing. There are a lot of townhomes. A townhome is around $500,000 to, $650,000, where a home, you can't even start it at $1 million. So most people can afford it. If they can afford anything here, it's a townhome.
Yeah. Okay, I've got to leave it there. Mike, anything else quickly you wanted to add?
Come to Heber. We got a great summer planned, and come and spend a night. It's a great place.
All right. Thanks for your time this morning. That's Heber City Council Member Mike Johnston. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. The Park City Council meets on Thursday in work session starting at 3:30 with the first budget discussion for next year's budget on the agenda. In the studio with a preview of the meeting, I have Acting City Manager Jody Emery and Deputy City Manager Heather Snedden. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Real quick, Jody, are you still Acting City Manager, or now that we have named a new City Manager, you go back to Deputy City Manager? Or?
Yes, I will on Adam's first day.
Okay, and first day is when?
The plan right now is for Adam to start on March 31st. We have coming up on Thursday the advice and consent piece of his appointment for the council to approve his appointment.
Yeah. Is he scheduled to be at that meeting?
He is scheduled to be at that meeting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Adam Leonard receiving a $250,000 salary plus benefits, putting him over the $300,000 mark. Park City, we're talking about 8,500 residents. It just seems like such a high. In fact, looking through Transparent Utah for city manager salaries, it's like the highest paid city manager job in the state. So what makes Park City so unique when it comes to the job market?
I think the way I would answer that is that we've done some research in terms of what the requirements are for the job, what the market will kind of is what we kind of need to offer in order for us to attract really capable and competent and experienced city managers. Park City is a really interesting and unique place to work. We have a lot of really big projects here that we work on. We have a lot of interested constituents. We have a budget that is allows us, you know, the opportunity to do some really interesting things here. And so I think that that is just the number that allows us to bring a city manager in who has the experience to fulfill a role that is challenging and that has high expectations for it and that has to deliver at a high value and service to the community.
All right. I just got to note that even our county manager, Summit County Manager, represents three times the number of residents and makes even less money than our new city manager. So I'm just, I guess I'm surprised by that. Jody, the council will be discussing next year's compensation strategy with employees possibly eligible for a 2.8% cost of living adjustment. That would mean about an $860,000 increase to the general fund. The council will also consider what is called a salary band level, which would cost about $1.75 million to the budget. And that would be without the cost of living adjustment. And then a third option is a salary band and the 2.8% COLA, amounting to about $2.6 million. So where does this money come from for staff salaries?
There are a number of options for how we would fund those. You didn't bring up the capital budget process is also going to be discussed on Thursday. And part of that conversation is whether we need to sort of discuss capital budget revenue streams, which may benefit the operation fund, operating budget, excuse me, not operation fund. So the staff compensation, council can actually consider any of the options or none of the options. They also have the ability to come back with a different proposal. So the numbers do seem challenging, but what I would say is that we did a compensation study in 2023, given that in 2022 we were seeing a lot of difficulty filling positions. We had a lot of open positions for a long time and realized that our compensation structure was not actually attracting the type of people that we really wanted, employees, people who were interested in the positions. And so the salary band leveling that you mentioned is really to stay in that pay plan, to stay on track with being able to compensate people for good performance. And we haven't been able to do that in the last 2 years. And so we're hoping we can return to that. That's one of the options presented to council.
All right. Well, let's just stick with the middle one, right?
Yep.
Just the salary band there of $1.75 million. What that means is that is not just one time. That goes forward plus future adjustments later on. So, I mean, again, that means raising another $1.75 million for the next fiscal year, plus all of the fiscal years after that, yeah?
I think the numbers change from year to year, just depending on what we're looking at. This is really to continue to pay employees based on their level of experience and their level of performance. COLA changes it for everybody, for the whole city. So that bumps up the pay bands, and then you then are creating another target to try to get to. And if we fall behind in the pay band, we'll just have to reconsider the pay plan and come up with a new solution.
Yeah. As you mentioned, the council will be looking at the city's long-term capital ambitions. As we know, that capital budget basically funded with leftover funds. So, again, if the council decides to implement those $2 million salary increases, that means it's $2 million less for capital projects?
That is one of the options. There's a few options that we're looking at. There are really two revenue levers that we can that are under analysis for potential changes to capital budget and operating budget allocations. So the first option is looking at that resort tax transfer. We can reduce or eliminate the around $4 million transfer that is currently directed to the transportation fund. That would allow transportation to move toward a self-sustaining enterprise model. Another option is to look at that CIP reallocation so we could rebalance revenue streams from the capital fund to ensure funding for the people and services that make the infrastructure work. What happens here in Park City is, as Heather mentioned a moment ago, we have a lot of really interesting large capital projects that are available to us. One thing that we don't always budget for appropriately is the ongoing maintenance and upkeep of those capital projects, and also sometimes those capital projects have other costs, like we need to staff the building, the community center would need to be staffed. And so that adds FTE, that adds time that we need to staff. And so this potential change to the capital fund is an option that we can consider.
So the key question for the council Thursday is whether or not they're ready to move beyond the pay-as-you-go and reevaluate every few months cycle to a new strategy?
Right. We'll be, so the other point is that transportation and capital funds both have a greater financial flexibility than the general fund. We can bond. There's a lot of things we can do, and they'll be talking about all of the options for how we can increase capital fund and also simultaneously fund these pay increases.
All right, let's look at the sales tax numbers for December. Those are finally out. We've been waiting for these. Again, December, usually one of the busiest months of the year. What do they tell you?
Well, right now, the December sales tax distribution, so this is another one of those, we talked about this. I feel like we talk about this every time, Leslie. Distributions are different from bookings. So the distribution can vary very, very widely from month to month. And what we're seeing is that the monthly distribution is lower than both last year and the adopted budget. But part of that is the timing, right? So some payments land in November, some payments come later. But what we look at, we try to look at the quarterly and year to date, and the rolling quarter and fiscal year to date collections are generally on track with our budget assumptions, even though those individual months can move around. But what I will say is the transient room tax is down more noticeably, and that does sort of, that does align with the softer overnight lodging activity that we're seeing in winter season. And this all reflects, our concerns. This has been a rough winter, as we all know.
Yeah, and let's put numbers to that, because what I read is that the transient room tax was down more than 21% for December, kind of that rolling quarter, which is, October through December, mm-hmm. down 6.5%. And July through December down almost 4.5%. And again, so what does that mean then for current year budget when you don't have the funds that you thought you were going to do? How does that change things now?
Right. We are looking at, like I think we've mentioned before, we've been very mindful about our spending, trying to make sure that we're not, if we have vacant positions that we're waiting, we hired very, we were able to be very flexible about our seasonal hiring to really staff what was needed. And so, we're watching the numbers, and we're projecting a flat budget.
All right, sales tax again, also down almost 10% compared to what was budgeted. So I guess when do things get serious? I mean, we can chalk it up to a bad snow year, or do you start to look at this could be the rule rather than the exception, as climate scientists have predicted?
Well, what I will say is February and March are typically our strongest months. So we will be looking at those numbers very closely. And while February felt pretty hopping in town, certainly March is looking like a slightly different story. And so we'll be watching those February and March numbers, and we can reassess at that point. That's all we can do.
All right, Heather, the city's partner on the Bonanza 5-acre site, Brinshore Development, will be at Thursday's meeting to present an update on the redevelopment of that property, asking the city council for approval to submit the land use application. So maybe just talk a little bit about what Brinshore is proposing.
Yes, they are coming back with a substantially refined redevelopment proposal based upon the feedback that they had received from the city council, I think last November, the last time we were in front of the council. So what we're going to see is a pretty detailed and extensive presentation on the development changes, some refined images of the buildings, the massings, you'll see the heights, you'll see more of what it's actually going to look like. And a much more detailed view inside of the Bonanza 5-acre site in the commons area with, you know, potential programming options, what that could look like. So really trying to respond to the feedback that we received from the public and received from the council thus far. We are, it is scheduled, as you mentioned, for potential action. So the city council could decide that these refinements really reflect what they want to proceed with, and that they are ready to direct Brinshore to proceed to the Planning Commission with the land use approvals. They could also decide that they would like some further refinements or changes, and then we would come back to the City Council.
Yeah, are they asking for any rezoning of the property?
You know, at this point, I don't believe so. We will have some, you know, potential questions for the Planning Commission that will require, you know, I'm not sure if variances is the right word, or some potential exceptions to requirements of the land management code that we will need to work through.
Okay, and that's what I was going to ask. Does it meet code at this point?
You know, at this point, I think it's really close. I think we will have some height exception issues that we are going to talk through and see what the City Council would like to do. I think there's some opportunity under the land management code where there's, you know, kind of, you work through some of the things that you provide in the project in order to qualify for potential, you know, height exceptions, and I think that that's where we're at.
Yeah, well, let's give people an idea. Can you break it down more for us? I mean, what's going to be built there with tall buildings?
Well, we've got one building that is four stories high. The rest are three stories.
All residential?
Not all residential. The main floor will be a mixed use. So we're looking at, you know, a lot of locally focused programming and potentially, you know, vendors and stores and an arts focus. We'd really love to incorporate, you know, our local artists into this project. So opportunities there. We're really trying to build a mixed use area for the community to gather and for also affordable housing, obviously.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the affordable housing, because I know that we haven't filled Engine House pretty much next door. I know Studio Crossing with affordable housing is not anywhere close to being filled. We're talking about more affordable housing at Clark Ranch. Do we really need more affordable housing on one of the busiest intersections of town?
You know, I think that it's a challenging question, but I think from the city's perspective, I think our housing team would tell you, yes, we do. And our developer is very experienced across the nation in building affordable housing projects, and they are satisfied they understand what the lease-up rates are across the city, and they are fine with that. It takes time. You know, it takes time for these things to lease up, and that's not an indication to us or our developer that means we don't need more affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. There's certainly kind of a growing outcry to keep this property, this 5 acres, as a public park, a gathering space. I mean, it can certainly have some of the uses you're talking about, you know, for local artists, for local markets, things like that, but without all of the density. Is that being considered at all?
You know, I expect that we will have some public input on Thursday to that effect. So I'm sure that we will have some members of our public who are talking about, you know, what they have in mind for this 5-acre site, that they would prefer to see it as a park. So I fully expect the City Council is going to hear that they're going to consider that, and that will be part of the discussion.
So the exclusive negotiated agreement, or ENA, with Brinshore was extended to April 10th. So are we thinking we need some kind of decision here shortly?
Yeah, what we are anticipating for this meeting is a consideration of an extension of that ENA while we go through the Planning Commission process, you know, hopefully with a term end with an extended ENA at the end of the year. We're still negotiating the terms of what that ENA will look like right now, but hoping that we are going to put that in front of the council on Thursday, and they will either make a decision then or at the next meeting with respect to the ENA.
All right, let's just jump to the work session item on the Recreate 248 Transit Study. Last year, the council adopted bus rapid transit, BRT lanes, as its locally preferred alternative. The staff report outlines all of the meetings that were held on this. So now what? I mean, when do we actually take some action?
Well, this is the staff communication we're providing to the City Council just to provide an overview of the public outreach that's been done in this project. And so hopefully the public can feel that their voices have been heard And then what we're anticipating for next steps really over the next couple of months are entering into the NEPA phase, and that's the National Environmental Policy Act. It's the environmental assessment, essentially, for federally funded transportation projects. So that's what's coming up for us.
Yeah, I read in the staff report, and this really confused me. I mean, I read that that community input suggested that ski locker storage be built at park and ride locations to incentivize bus use. And I think we got that wrong. I mean, why would we want lockers at a park and ride? I think what we want lockers is at the resort, so we don't have to pay $20 a day to store our shoes. But I mean, that's the whole idea, making it easier to get on a bus. But what good would having a locker at a park and ride? That means I have to get my skis out, put my boots on, still carry them up the bus. I think that's the challenging part of riding the bus.
I understand that. And I think we're trying to meet the needs of all different types of riders, right? So it may be that some might like to store their equipment at a park and ride. Some won't want to do that, obviously. So I think we're kind of responding to what we believe we've received in terms of feedback of some options, what this might look like.
All right. I think what I recall hearing is that people wanted bus lockers at park and ride so that they could ride their bus or ride their bike to the park and ride and then get on a bus, not ski lockers. I guess I'm just really confused by that.
And I apologize. I don't have more details for you on that, Leslie.
All right. And real quick, the Vanpool Project, in November 2024, a pilot subsidy for this Vanpool program with Summit County, Utah Transit Authority, and Park City was supported by council. Do we have the program off the ground yet?
We do. It has been underway since the winter. We have about 11 active Vanpools, and so far it's been a successful project. It's going to proceed for 2 years, and then we're going to evaluate whether or not it continues, whether or not it's financially feasible, and its overall effectiveness.
Yeah, and I think that's the concern, long-term affordability and whether it's worth it.
Yeah, those are things we're going to be looking at. I mean, right now these are UTA vans, and the subsidy is provided by the city and the county for a portion of the operating costs. And we're evaluating, yes, as you said, sort of the use, the effectiveness, whether or not it's financially viable to continue forward, and how that would go about.
Are you talking about ending the program before the next 2 years? Or we're going to let it go through the...
We're planning to let it proceed for the 2 years.
Okay. Real quick, anything else you wanted to add before?
I would love to mention that we are accepting applications for open seats on 8 different advisory boards and commissions. They shape land use decisions, public art, parks policy, more. Takes no experience. And we would love to have you apply online at parkcity.gov. And the deadline for those applications is April 8th.
All right. Jody Emery, Heather Sneddon, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. Leslie.
Well, on the phone from the Timpanogos Valley Theater, I have the director of their upcoming production, Sister Act Junior, Sarah Ray. Good morning, Sarah. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. It's good to be here.
Yeah, so this production is based, I think, on the film starring, what, Whoopi Goldberg?
Yes, it is. So it's a junior version, but it's based on the story of that first Sister Act.
So
with Whoopi Goldberg in it.
So for listeners who don't know that show, can you tell us a little bit about the story of Sister Act?
Absolutely. So our main character, Dolores, is she's got a boyfriend who's not maybe the greatest guy in the world, and she witnesses him murder somebody, basically, and has to go into hiding. So they hide her in a convent, which is very different than her normal lifestyle, and kind of just some hilarity ensues. She teaches the nuns to sing on key, which they do not do before she arrives. And then they just kind of form some unexpected friendships.
Okay, so what drew this production? It's a junior, meaning it's kind of for a youth-focused production, to the theater this season.
So, yes, this age group for this production is our 12 to 18-year-olds. So it's our teens, and we wanted to be able to provide a show that really showcased some of our girls for our teens. A lot of shows often feature more male lead parts, and we have some very talented girls in our valley, and so we were excited to be able to bring a show that kind of pulls them forward on the stage.
Awesome. So what's it been like working with the younger performers on the show?
It's a lot of fun and a lot of chaos at times. So our goal with our youth program at Tent Valley Theater is to make sure that we can include a lot of kids, anyone who really wants to be involved in theater. So we often get, we've got several in this show who've never been in a production before and it's their first experience, or some that have been in a couple, but it's their first time getting to be kind of more of the lead characters. And so it's a challenge to get them to learn things, but also it gives them a lot of fun opportunities to grow and develop.
Yeah. Now, do you have a single cast? I know sometimes TVT will provide two casts just to give people a break.
Yeah. So for our youth shows, we try not to double cast. They don't do a lot of performances, and so we try to keep it to a single cast when we can. So this one is just a single cast.
All right. So when and where can people catch the performances?
They open this Friday on March 20th, and they'll perform in the evenings on March 20th through the 28th. So Friday, Saturday. So the 21st, we also have a matinee performance. And then they'll perform again next Wednesday on the 25th, and then Friday the 27th and Saturday the 28th.
All right. Let's see. I also understand that Timpanogos Valley Theater has been hosting weekly improv nights. How did that idea come about?
Funny you ask. My husband's very involved with that. So they have weekly on Wednesday nights, they meet as an improv troupe, and they welcome anybody who's ever thought about trying out improv and seeing how they like it. And so they meet on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m., and then they do monthly performances, usually on the second Saturday of every month. It depends on if we have other performances going on.
Yeah. So again, I mean, is it geared more towards performers or just anybody who wanted to try something new?
It's for anybody who wants to try something new. They usually have people come to the, they call them rehearsals, but they're not really rehearsing because, again, it's all improvised. But where the practice is, anybody's welcome to come. And then after you've been coming for, I don't know exactly how long, but a certain amount of time, and they decide, hey, are you interested in performing with us at one of our shows, and kind of let people go forward with that. But you do not have to have any performing experience ahead of time for that.
All right. My understanding you also have auditions coming up for the production 1776. What can you tell us about that?
Yes. So it's a collaboration with the Heber City. They asked that we perform this show as a celebration for the 250th anniversary of our nation. So auditions are coming up actually tomorrow from 6:30 to 9:30. And if you get on the TempValleyTheater.com website, there should be a link there to sign up for an audition. It is a very, very men-heavy show. There's actually 22 men in the cast and 2 women. So if any men out there have ever been interested in trying theater, now's a great chance.
Yeah. Would you cast, though, a different gender?
I know our director is hoping to keep it to men, but if necessary, she'll cast women as men. Yeah. She would kind of like to keep it more true to the story. So if possible, she's hoping to get enough men.
All right. So is there a way for people to prepare if they are interested in auditioning, or is it just kind of a cold read?
Yeah, so you can, again, hop onto the website to sign up for an audition slot. I believe there's probably open slots if you just show up at the theater. And then just come prepared to, I believe she's having people tell like a one-minute story or a poem or monologue. And then prepare to, with a song of about 30 seconds to show off your vocal chops.
All right. Can you give us a timeline? I mean, so we've got auditions this week and performances happening when?
Yeah, so auditions are tomorrow, and then they've got callbacks by invitation on Monday evening next week. And then rehearsals will start right away. They generally, for our community shows, will rehearse Tuesday, Thursday evenings and Saturday mornings. And then performances will run June 23rd through July 4th.
Awesome. Okay. Anything else that's going on at the theater?
Yes. We actually have our younger youth performance coming up pretty quickly after Sister Act, and they have been rehearsing for Singing in the Rain Junior, and that is our 7 to 13-year-olds, and they've got a big cast and working hard on that, and I think it's going to be a great show. They perform April 16th through the 18th.
Okay. What show is that going to be? I didn't... wasn't clear.
Sorry, Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain, got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, anything else you wanted to mention, Sarah?
I think that's pretty much it.
Okay, the website is just search Timpanogos Valley Theater?
Mm-hmm, it's timpvalleytheater.com.
Okay, Sarah Ray, again, is the director of their upcoming production, Sister Act Junior. Sarah, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, the Summit County Council today may greenlight the Snyderville Basin's first public cemetery. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the public will get to weigh in first.
Summit County is poised to allow for a cemetery on Bear Cub Drive between the Run Amuck Dog Park and State Route 224. That's the second proposed location for what would be the Snyderville Basin's first public cemetery. Max Greenhall is the cemetery board chair.
Well, we've been at this for 2.5 years, and I think it's time. So let us go forward. We'll conduct a public hearing?
That hearing will be Wednesday, after which the council could vote to approve the location. Various agencies besides the county need to sign off on subdividing land for a cemetery, which is not allowed under the property's deed restrictions. After that, the cemetery board would then seek a permit from the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. The hearing begins at 6 p.m. at the Sheldon Richens Building in Kimball Junction and on Zoom. Most of the meeting is focused on the Kimball Junction area. Just after 1 p.m., council members will discuss, but not make a decision on, the Junction Commons Outlet Mall redevelopment. Then they'll talk about the bus rapid transit system under construction on State Route 224. At around 4:20 p.m., they'll revisit and possibly approve the changes to the UOP's development agreement they discussed last week. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.